Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
While we talk about toke on Toker Talk Radio.
So by the way, when it comes to pot, you know, if you're 40 years old, you live in a log cabin in Oregon, you got 12 giant pot plants in your backyard, have a ball.
Live from beautiful Portland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios.
Cannabis.
Plus your calls live at 971-533-7111.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
Holland, is it real? Don't tease me.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years.
And now, here's your host, the guru of ganja graphics, the sultan of sativa statistics, and the worst nightmare of a reefer mad prohibitionist. A polite, perspicacious, productive pothead with a propensity for PowerPoint. Radical Russ Belville.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome back. All that, sit, boy, sit. Good dog. Yeah, today's show dedicated to the memory of my dog, Roscatelli. Yeah, my dog died last Friday, got hit by a car. Happens sometimes, but it's the damnedest circumstance. See, my ex-wife lives down there in Florida, and got hit by that hurricane. It tore up her roof and tore up the skylights in her house, right? So she had these roofers there, six or seven guys working on the roof, pound, 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 saw, 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 buzz, buzz, buzz. So the dog's all, you know, kind of hyper as it is. And then one of them left the door open. He got out. Now, here's where it gets weird. The road he got hit on is a mile away from the house. And my dog's not the kind of dog to, like, sprint and take off for a mile. He had to be chased that way. So it's a little disheartening to me, a little bit of a bummer. But I've got his stuff. I've got his remains. And I also brought home his, like, dog bed and all that kind of stuff because I'm going to get a new dog, folks. So be on the listen, because some show in the future I'll be telling you all about my brand new dog. My brand new dog, by the way, he's already got a name. I haven't got the dog yet, but I already have the dog name. He will be named Buford T. Justice. That's right. I've decided to name all my dogs after fictional redneck Southern sheriffs. Roscoe P. Coltrane, Buford T. Justice. If you know of any other fictional redneck Southern sheriff names, send them my way. Those, I thought of Buford Pusser, too, from Walking Tall, but I didn't want to have two dogs named Buford. So anyway, I'm also back from vacation. Spent 10 days in Jamaica, and it was phenomenal, folks. It was amazing. But I got to say, we do weed so much better here in America. I got to have it. You know, got hands down to the American weed compared to the Jamaican weed. Which is not necessarily to say that the Jamaican weed was bad or by any means, but it's just, you know, not the same potency. It's just, it's an outdoor grown, had to pick out the occasional seed. That was like, whoa, seeds. Like, wow. But I have to pick out the occasional seed, and it's like, it's not potent enough to really get me where I need to go. You know, like when you have a boat and you're trying to bail out a boat, and if you don't have a big enough pump or a big enough bucket, that you're just, you know, you're staying at the same level. That's what it feels like smoking the Jamaican weed. It's like I smoke the weed, and it's like I'm already sober by the time I've in that one joint. So I got to smoke another one. So now the other side of that, of course, is that for what you will spend on a sandwich baggie of weed in the States, we'll get you a shopping baggie. You know, one of those plastic shopping bags full of ganja in Jamaica. So there is that. There is at least plenty to smoke. Got to give him that. But it's a beautiful thing. I learned to snorkel. That was great. Saw a bunch of fish. Saw an eagle ray, saw a nurse shark, saw some barracuda. That was fun. We'll talk more about that and the rest of my vacation. But also coming up here in this hour two, in our next segment, we got some reefer madness to debunk. You remember that that guy, that radio host guy in Twin Falls, Idaho, who piped up the other day? Well, he's at it again, Bill Collier. So I got to attack that one. And then we'll talk a little bit about democracy, because the Electoral College is voting today to ensconce Donald Trump as our president. And I'm going to tell you how we can fix American democracy. And it doesn't even involve getting rid of the Electoral College. That's all coming up. Plus your calls at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Legal to listen to all over the world.
We're just not sure about France.
CannabisRadio.com.
While the feds and state are doing their dance, you still need to transact business and manage your cash. Go professional and let your customers pay with PayQuick. They pay you and they earn rewards points. PayQuick connects to your bank account for free and secures all of your transactions. And with PayQuick, you can pay your producers and processors for free. Plus, it pays to have it because it makes depositing your cash safe and so easy. No cops, no crooks, just compliance and comfort, knowing you have your cannabis business in check with PayQuick. PayQuick, the safe and easy way to pay. PayQuick.com.
Cannabis Confidential with Dr. Dina. Candid.
I want to give you the inside story.
Captivating.
I want to introduce you to my kind and amazingly talented friends.
Compelling.
We get to meet some of the most amazing cannabis activists and warriors around.
Listen in as medical marijuana pioneer Dr. Dina shares never-before-heard stories, chats with cannabis insiders and celebrity friends, and provides invaluable perspective and insight into one of the fastest-growing industries in the world.
I want to share with you what was once confidential information. Let's expose the truth, discuss the issues, and learn the facts.
Cannabis Confidential, only on CannabisRadio.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com, and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death. Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind. If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face-to-face with the monster of marijuana, he dropped dead from fright.
You know, it's not easy countering seven decades of propaganda in a two-hour show, but let's try. It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Reefer Madness Debunked.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. It's 9 after the hour. And for our Reefer Madness Debunked today, we take a look at an opinion piece published on Fox News Radio's 1310 KLIX News and Talk Radio in Twin Falls, Idaho. Of course, Idaho being my birth state. And the title of this one's called Marijuana: The Drug of Choice for Teenage Killers. Yeah. Marijuana, the drug of choice for teenage killers. There we go. That's better. And it's by Bill Colley, who's this guy that we ran with one of his Reefer Madness screeds the other day. And this one opens up, the picture, too, that they open up with is a arm lying on the ground near a lighter, a spoon, and a needle. You know, because we're all about shooting up the weed. It's a short piece by Bill Colley. I'll just read you the whole thing because it's short enough here. And try to, if you're drinking coffee or any other liquid, put it down for now because you don't want to do the spit take all over your monitor, okay? So let me bring this up to you. This is Bill Colley for the newsradio1310.com. America's dope dealers are scoring some new victories, and the Grim Reaper is a busy spirit. Maybe you haven't seen the story out of Massachusetts. A teenage boy had his head and arms allegedly removed by a friend after the pair shared a few joints. It's a good thing marijuana is harmless, but unfortunately the headless boy is dead from some unkind cuts. In Philadelphia's Kensington neighborhood, the death toll from drug overdoses is 9 in just 1.5 days. Kensington is a community probably smaller than Boise and maybe not much larger than Twin Falls. Having lately been the target of the dope fiend crowd, I guess I'm not making any efforts for peaceful coexistence. Pity, as I so wanted to be loved by fiends, perverts, and junkies now at air temperature. I'll wager marijuana wasn't just the gateway drug for the Massachusetts killer, but the dead as well in Pennsylvania. All right, Bill, let's tackle this. It's amazing how it's like as marijuana becomes more and more legal and more people are accepting it, the reefer madness is becoming far more potent, right? It's almost like the iron law of prohibition. You prohibit something and the drug becomes more potent. Here, we're eliminating prohibition, so the reefer madness is becoming more potent. They're able to cram more madness into smaller paragraphs. Now, unfortunately for Bill, I looked shit up. So I went and looked up this story of the teenager out of Massachusetts. And indeed, it's a pretty grisly story. 15-year-old teenager lures a 16-year-old friend out in the woods, stabs him, mutilates the body, hacks the head off. The body was so mutilated that it took 11 hours to conduct the autopsy. Okay, so yeah, we're not talking about something that's like... but Bill Colley wants you to think that these two kids are just hanging out, having a good time. They smoke a couple of joints. The 15-year-old goes psycho and cuts up the 16-year-old. Folks, that is not at all what is behind this story. I looked it up. It's in the Boston Globe. You can look it up, too. And here's the part that he conveniently left out. This is a quote from the Boston Globe story. Classmates Nisha Torres, 16, and Isaiah Vasquez, 17, described Borges as a quiet teenager with anger issues. Quote, he was scary, said Vasquez, who added that Borges was friends with her brother. Quote, he was negative to be around. He seemed mad at the world, end quote. And Torres added, quote, you don't see him with a smile. He would always get in a lot of fights, end quote. So, Mr. Caller, this is just a case of a bad kid. This kid was just messed up. Plain and simple. Smoke pot or not smoke pot, this kid just had some problems. People don't go from zero to decapitation murder over a joint. Now, I know a guy like Bill here is going to try to argue, oh, well, he was a bad kid, but maybe he wouldn't have killed anyone if he hadn't smoked pot. Hey, maybe he would have taken an assault rifle to the entire class if he hadn't smoked pot. I mean, we don't know. You can't make arguments like that. What we've got here is a grisly, terrible murder by a kid who obviously has some sociopathic issues going on. The weed didn't make that happen. And besides, Bill, if you want to play this game, this post hoc ergo propter hoc game, you know, this happened, then that happened, so this must have caused that. No, if you want to play that game, then I'd encourage you to take a look at the domestic violence. Take a look at murder, take a look at all these cases, and find how many of them were drinking that day. I'll wait. Yeah, it's a pretty significant number there, isn't it, Bill? Yeah. I'll tell you what, Bill, I got some homework for you. Here's some homework for you, because I've actually done this in many states, in red states, blue states, green states, every color state, I've done this. Find yourself some cops. Ask them about the contributions of alcohol to their domestic violence calls. Ask them about how often when they go to a domestic violence call, it's because alcohol was involved. Or if they have to go to some sort of stabbing or shooting. How many times is alcohol involved? Okay. Then ask them how many times they've had to go rushing to some house because the wife was getting beat up by her pothead husband. Yeah, they smoked a little too much pot. The next thing you know, they're beating the hell out of each other. How many times have they gotten that call, Bill? We'll wait. Go look that up. Because I'll tell you, when I talk to the cops all around the country, overwhelmingly, they tell me it's the alcohol that's the problem. Overwhelmingly, they tell me, no, weed, it's not a problem. I have people causing problems with weed. The only problem that gets caused with weed is when there's violence over the dealing of weed because it's illegal, right? You don't see Dos Equis and Corona shooting it out in the streets of Mexico, right? Because there's legal venues to sell those products. And when there's conflicts between sellers, there's legal venues to take those conflicts. There's courts, there's lawsuits, there's arbitrators. There's negotiations that can happen. The only harm being caused by marijuana is due to its illegality. There are 30 million of us out here that are smoking pot, Bill. 30 million. If there was some sort of causality to violence, you'd have a bloodbath every hour in this country with how many of us are smoking pot. Come on now, get real. The violent crime rates are at some of their lowest recorded levels ever. And acceptance of marijuana is at some of its highest recorded levels ever. How come that post hoc ergo propter hoc doesn't work for you? How come you can't look at that as a causality and say, hey, look, as we've relaxed marijuana laws, people have chilled the fuck out. Stop beating each other up and shooting each other. How come that doesn't work? And by the way, I'm not suggesting that's the cause of our lower crime rates. I actually think the Freakonomics guys are right in this issue, where the legality of abortion has a lot to do with why our crime rates are down. But that's Freakonomics. You can look it up yourself. This Reefer Madness, this other one too, you know, where he tries to say, oh, in the Kensington neighborhood of Philadelphia, drug overdoses 9 in just 1.5 days. Okay, you want to take a look at the statistics and the studies, the numerous ones now that have been backing up the point that there is a 25% reduction in drug overdose deaths, in opioid overdose deaths, in places that have greater access to cannabis. This is not one of the correlative, speculative type of things or anecdotal. This is actual science, Bill. Science that tells us you give people access to cannabis, they're less likely to die from those opiate overdoses. 36 hours, 9 fatal ODs in this Kensington area. Fentanyl-laced heroin is believed to have caused those overdoses. And here's something that most people don't understand about opioids and heroin and all that, overdoses. Most people, believe it or not, don't want to die, right? Most people that want to do heroin would like to get high or get not sick and not die. That would be the goal. And most people that do their drugs know how much they can do, know how to do it. They got their little protocol down. The problem that comes along is when you're used to taking X amount of heroin day after day, you're used to that X amount, and then X comes with Y, some fentanyl, which is 50 to 100 times more potent. Now suddenly your X plus Y equals OD. Next thing you know, you're dead. Not through your fault. You were being responsible. You were taking the same amount that you're used to taking. But because of an unregulated, untested market that gave you a tainted product. We don't have those overdose problems in Insight, in these Vancouver, British Columbia assisted supervised, medically pure heroin injection sites. Ah, so frustrating. Hey, it's 420 here. Let's take our break. Let's get safe. And when we come back, I'm going to save democracy in six easy ways.
Being green is good. Growing green is good. Making green is great. CannabisRadio.com.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Vuber vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Vuber vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be. The Vuber way.
Midnight, July 1st, 2015, adult marijuana prohibition came to an end in Oregon. Immediately, over 400,000 adults who consume cannabis responsibly were no longer criminals. This is what freedom sounds like. Brought to you by Portland Normal.
Marijuana is not addictive, but listening to the Russ Belville Show is.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your Fired Up Lawyer, or email firedup.lawyer@gmail.com.
Pod 2.0.
It's not your father's Woodstock weed.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 23 after the hour, and as I mentioned before I went on vacation, I'm going to take some time, an hour or two, from time to time, maybe not every day, but a little more often, to talk about just politics in general. Yeah, this is Toker Talk Radio this hour, too, and so it's going to be talk radio. We're going to talk about politics from a toker's point of view. So we'll have some focus on what different politics means as far as how it's going to affect marijuana and legalization and so forth. But we're also just going to talk about politics. So I wanted to bring up the Electoral College vote that's happening today. There's been a lot of talk about this because of this idea of there being faithless electors or Hamilton electors. People that are upset at the election of Donald Trump when he's received 2.8 million fewer popular votes. They're upset about that because they, oh, it's not fair, it's not the majority, but it never has been, folks. It's always been this Electoral College. And the Electoral College was basically set up by our founders to help protect the slave states. Let's just be honest, that's what it was for, is to make the Southerners feel good about, you know, that they weren't going to be taken over by, of course, the Northern states had greater populations. So if it was just one man, one vote, and also remember we had that three-fifths compromise where we could say that the slaves being owned in the South were worth three-fifths of a man when it came to apportionment for representatives and senators, and I mean representatives, I should say. So there's all sorts of things that are antiquated about the Electoral College. The biggest problem, I'd say, is that how it gives disproportionate power to the smaller states. You got a situation where in California, there's 55 electoral votes, but there's 38 million people. And then you got Wyoming. It's got three electoral votes, but it's only got like 500,000 people. And that makes a Wyoming elector beholden to fewer voters. That is, the voters in Wyoming have more power than the voters in California. So it does violate, in a sense, that sort of one man, one vote idea. But the Electoral College also has kind of a noble idea, and that is that you're not just winning votes, you're winning states. And that this is a United States, and as particularly when you think back to the founding, it was a much more of a federation sort of idea, where you were a Virginian first. You lived in and were part of the state of Virginia, which was one of the states in the United States. They didn't think of themselves the same way we do now, in a more federal sense, in a more American, you're an American first, and then you happen to live in Oregon, right? But it was much more state aligned back then. So there's a sort of elegance to what they were thinking of there. But the other part that's bringing up this whole Electoral College issue is the tampering from Russia. And, you know, we can discuss how effective it was. To me, it's the asymmetrical warfare aspect of it, right? It's like the fact that it was all going against the Dems, but nobody was hacking the Republican committee and releasing their emails, right? It was kind of lopsided, whether or not it had the effect or not. Irrelevant in this case, they were trying to affect our election. And so there's been this call for some of these electors then to vote their conscience, to vote against Trump or to not vote Trump or vote Kasich or something, right? To deny Trump getting in, or at least to throw the election to the House and maybe give some time for some investigation on how much collusion there was Russia. And I mean, given who Donald Trump's putting in his administration these days, too, you know, this Secretary of State guy who's tied up with Russia and so forth. I mean, it's remarkable to see the party of Reagan. Oh, they're an evil empire, that Russia. Remarkable to see the party of Reagan just loving that. You see, the Republican approval ratings for Vladimir Putin have gone through the roof lately. Right. There you go. That's your true America. Anyway. With respect to all of this, I've been thinking a lot. And I thought a lot over vacation about this. Of what do we do? What do we do to fix some of these things that are wrong with democracy? Because I've had a lot of discussions and debates with people over third parties and how do we get more third parties in? How do we break the Democrats and the Republicans being so corporate and paid off with money? You know, Citizens United, abolish the Electoral College. I don't think we need to do those things. I think there are some things we can do that would make it a little better for our democracy. Now, the unfortunate thing is I don't think any of these things will happen. that's the bad part. The Electoral College has selected Donald Trump. He's gotten at least 270. We don't know what his total is yet. I'm still looking here. One of Minnesota's 10 electors refused to vote. A Colorado elector was replaced, etc. We'll catch up on this a little bit. But, you know, he's going to be president. Let's just face it. Anyway, so I thought about how we could, what are some of the things we ought to do to fix our democracy? And there are some things that are possible. I mean, they're technically possible. And the kind of things I think would also be popular with the people, but I think for political reasons won't happen. Let's go through them. First of all, the first thing I would have us do is to establish ranked choice voting. We've talked about this on the show before, especially whenever I discuss third parties, I always bring up that as long as we keep our voting the way it is, as long as we have first past the post voting, we're always going to have a duopoly in control. It's always going to be two parties. It's just game theory. It's actually something that's called Duverger's Law. Duverger's Law. Duverger was a French political scientist in the 1700s who figured out that if it's one person, single party, you know, plurality type voting, first past the post, like we have, mathematically speaking, you're going to get two parties. Today it's the Dems and the Republicans. It could be the Whigs and the Federalists. It could be whatever versus whatever, but it's always going to be two just because of the game theory involved. Didn't you start voting for a third party? You start undermining the first, you know, you get the spoiler effect like Ralph Nader, like Jill Stein, whatever. And I'm not even, you know, let's not even argue about if they were spoilers or not, but it's the concepts that we need to keep in mind here. And the same Duverger's Law shows that if you have more choices that are possible, that you can increase the viability of third parties. Particularly speaking, what ranked choice voting means is that you pick the candidates you like in the order that you like them. So maybe in this election, you'd have gone number one, Jill Stein, number two, Gary Johnson, number three, Hillary Clinton, and then nothing for Trump, right? You're not going to even rank them, right? Which is also possible in these ranked choice things. You don't have to rank everybody. So when we do the first round of voting, we count up all the number one votes, right? So maybe it goes 48 Clinton, 46 Trump, 3% Johnson, 1% Stein. Well, none of them got 50%. So in the first round, you drop the last place. In this case, you drop Jill Stein. Once you get rid of Jill Stein, you now add all of the Jill Stein votes. What were the second choice of the Jill Stein votes? Now, in our example, your second choice was Gary Johnson. So your Jill Stein vote now jumps over to Gary Johnson. Others may jump over to Trump. Others may jump over to Clinton, whatever. But now we're only counting the votes of the three. Run that through. Maybe it goes 48 Clinton, 46 Trump, 4% Johnson. We still don't have a 50%. So now we drop Johnson. And then the 4% of Johnson's votes, we go to the number three. What was the third choice of those people? The second or third choice. Now those votes are getting divided between Clinton and Trump. And then maybe one of those people gets 50%. But basically what this means is that the person who gets the majority is going to be liked by the most people as either their first or second choice. And this way you don't have a spoiler vote effect. You don't have to worry, right? You can say, hey, I can go wholeheartedly behind Jill Stein because if she doesn't make it, my number two choice is Hillary Clinton. And then she makes it, right? So it frees you up to vote your conscience without worrying that you might end up causing the exact opposite of what your conscience wants and getting like a Trump, if you're a Stein voter, for example. Now, this is possible. Maine has just passed an amendment this election. The same time they voted to legalize, they instituted state and federal votes will use ranked choice. There's also a bunch of counties and cities that use it all across the country. So it's not as if it's a new thing. We can do this in America. Now, I think it could happen in the states that have initiative power, just like Maine did. That's only 24 states. The rest of the states, the 26 states that don't have initiative power, why would the Democrats and Republicans in those states want to institute something that would bring third parties in and upset their apple cart? That's where the political problem is. Here's another thing I think we could do to fix our politics, and that is increase the size of the House of Representatives. Have you heard about Article the First? So we just had Bill of Rights Day recently, December 15th. And you think of the Bill of Rights, you know, First Amendment, freedom of speech, press, you know, all that. Second Amendment, you know, bear arms and so forth, right? We think of the Bill of Rights. Well, the Bill of Rights were part of 12 articles that were written. Originally, our Bill of Rights was going to have 12 in it. Numbers 3 through 12 became our Bill of Rights. So actually, if you read the articles as they originally written, the First Amendment was the third one, and the Second Amendment was the fourth one, and so on. And they call it Article the Third, Article the Fourth, Article the Fifth, and so on. Now, Article the Second that was written by our founding fathers back in the 1700s was the one that says Congress can't raise its own pay. Like a pay raise has to take place to the next Congress, right? That didn't get ratified till 1992. That was the 27th Amendment. So that sat around for over 200 years until it finally got ratified. That was Article the Second. So Article the First is still out there. It's still waiting to be ratified. And what Article the First is one that says that there will be a maximum of 50,000 citizens in a congressional district. What it was is it was a proportional representation amendment that said until we have X number of people, there'll be 100 representatives and they'll represent no more than 20,000 people and then there'll be no more than 30,000. Well, the way it would work out is that today, if the Article of First was mandated, a congressional district could be no more than 50,000 people. Right now, congressional districts average 700,000 people. So how responsive is a representative when to one voter when that's one out of 700,000 people? Now, here's the thing. Our House of Representatives right now is 435 people. If we had one representative for every 50,000 citizens in America, our House of Representatives would be 6,400 congresspeople. And sometimes people freak out. They're like, geez, 6,400. How would we ever get anything done? Well, gosh, we got 435 now. How much are they getting done? What are we worried about? Gridlock? Right? Here's what we do. Abandon this idea that they all have to be in Washington, D.C. 3 days a week in one building when usually they're out actually on the phone trying to raise money. Forget that. This is the 21st century. Have us a House of Representatives that's done virtually. Have them meet and vote through Skype. Have all this done electronically and keep them in their districts. Imagine that your congressperson, instead of being in Washington, D.C. half the time, was at his district, and the district was small enough that it was no more people than your average college football stadium. How much more responsive would they be if not only they had to vote while they were in the district, like you could pick it outside their office while they're voting, but also knowing that your voice was one of just 50,000 people. Now, here's the other upside of that. It helps fix our electoral college problem because we pick our electors based on how many reps we have plus how many senators. With one per 50,000, California would have 778 electoral votes and Wyoming would have 14 instead of the 55-3 ratio that we have now. It would make Congress better. It would make our electoral college better.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Cannabis use isn't the only thing growing.
So are we.
Grow with us. CannabisRadio.com.
The cannabis business industry is growing. Business is booming. And as new opportunities arise in newly legalized states, each market is getting more competitive. Today, it takes more than just being a good grower. Do you have the resources to market and handle this ever-changing business landscape? Let Canna Management Corporation help you grow your canna business with our vast resources and experience to make your business a fully functional service company. Financial management, HR, sales, marketing, efficiency, and more. CMC has the experience and the expertise to improve your business and help you better meet the demands of your clients and customers. Call Canna Management Corporation and let our team get you ready to grow. 415-269-8015. That's 415-269-8015. Or visit canna-management.com.
Today I started smoking my weed again. I'm right back where I've really always been. I got over my weed just long enough. Let my probation end. And today I started smoking my weed again. Hey boy, pass me that joint. Chong's choice.
The Tommy Chong Podcast, only on CannabisRadio.com.
The Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com, the National Wildlife Refuge for Marijuana Unicorns.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Warning, it's taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that. This is Dan Michaels from DanMichaelsAudio.com, and you're listening to Radical Russ on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everybody. 40 after the hour. And checking out our live chat room at CannabisRadio.com. Tommy asks if anybody out west wants to adopt him. Yeah, Tommy, we've actually got an extra room here at Delta 9 Studios. Serious. $600 a month plus your share of utilities and the deposit, which is you got to let me use one of your Harleys. Yeah, we're a helmet state, by the way, Tommy. So if you're coming out here, make sure you bring your brain bucket. So I was discussing how I'm going to fix democracy. Give me the magic wand, and I assure you I'll have democracy fixed. Step one, ranked choice voting, so we can get more third parties involved in the process. Step two, adopt Article the First as our 28th Amendment so that we can have a bigger House of Representatives. 6,400 people in the House of Representatives meet electronically. They live at home in their districts. And this also fixes, I talked about how it fixes the Electoral College, because right now you've got, here's an interesting thing to think about. The state of California and the state of New York combined, two big populous states. California has 30 million adults of voting age, 18 and older. New York has 15 million adults of voting age. So between the two of these two blue states, they have 45 million voters. Compare that to a bunch of interior states that I selected. Alabama, Alaska, Idaho, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Mississippi, Montana, Nebraska, New Mexico, North Dakota, South Carolina, South Dakota, Utah, West Virginia, and Wyoming combined have 28 million adult voters. So remember, California and New York, 45 million adults. Those 16 states, 16 red states, 28 million adults. Comparing California and New York, how much did they pay in taxes to the federal government? Almost half a trillion dollars, $493 billion. How many electoral votes do they have? 84. Okay, so for 84 electoral votes, California's got 45 million voters and a half a trillion in taxes they pay. Those 16 red states, 28 million voters, less than $200 billion in taxes, same 84 electoral votes. How is that fair? This is like 18 people going to the pizza parlor and two of them are paying for the pizza, but the other 16 are picking all the toppings. Like, it's not quite fair. And this means that there's a disproportionate power to a voter in a smaller state because their vote is a smaller share of their elector. If we do this in Wyoming units, we'll pick Wyoming because it's the smallest state, right? So Wyoming has three electoral votes. It's got 447,000 adults. That means one electoral vote represents 149,000 voters. About 150,000, right? One to 150,000. In California, that one electoral vote represents over a half million voters, 557,000. This is a ratio of 3.7 to 1. That means it takes 3.7 voters in California to equal the voice of one Wyoming voter. It takes two Idaho voters to match the voice of one Wyoming voter, and so forth. So this fix of Article the First, make our House of Representatives be one representative for every 50,000 people, helps solve that problem, because what we've got right now is a ratio where it's 3.7 to 1, right? Takes 3.7 Wyoming voters to match one California voter. If we increase the number of electoral votes so that California goes up to 778 and Wyoming goes up to 14, the ratio then becomes 1.2 to 1. It's still tilted toward Wyoming, but not 3.7 to 1. It's just 1.2 to 1. This would not only help our Electoral College problem, but another problem that we have in our democracy, and that is gerrymandering. You know, when they make the weird districts so that when you've only got 435 representatives, the effect of gerrymandering is much greater. When your congressional district can be 700,000 people, that's a lot more area for which you to draw your weird-ass gerrymandered district.
But if your district's only 50,000 and there's 6,400 reps, even if you do successfully gerrymander a district, the effect of it is smaller. It's 1/6400th of the Congress instead of 1/435th of the Congress. All right, so that's the Article the First. I've always loved Article the First. I really wish we could get that. Why it won't happen, though? Well, it takes ratifying an amendment to the Constitution, which is either 2/3 of the House and Senate approve it. Why would they do that? Or 2/3 of the states to do it. And that would require enough of the interior states, which would end up losing power in this deal. So no, Article First isn't going to get passed. Damn it. Here's my third choice to fix things. Paper trail vote by mail. Just change the way we vote. I mean, suppose you were a rich bastard and you wanted to make sure that poor people couldn't vote. And this way, you and your rich bastard friends can get elected, and you can pass laws that favor rich bastards. So how would you design a voting system to make it so you and your rich bastard friends can vote, but the poor people can't? Well, first thing you'd do is make sure that you have to vote in person on a certain day. Right? Since you're rich, I mean, you can rearrange your schedule. You know, just have your driver take you to the polls. But the poor folks, they're going to have a tougher time getting time off work of their two jobs, or they might have transportation difficulties trying to get to the polls. And the next thing you do, you'd schedule the vote to happen on a specific day and make that day a Tuesday. Because like if it was Saturday or Sunday, more poor people would have the day off and they could go vote. And if it was a Monday or a Friday, you could possibly arrange a 3-day weekend, maybe have some sick or vacation days to make it, but you put it on a Tuesday and, well, now you can't take 2 days off in a row. Now you got to work a Monday and then off on a Tuesday, and everyone's trying to get the same Tuesday off, and that's going to be difficult. And then the next thing you do is you make sure that the rich people polling places are open and well-staffed, and there's plenty of ballots and plenty of machines, and only takes you 10 or 20 minutes to hop out of the Mercedes and mark your ballot and head off to your afternoon tea time. But for the poor people, well, make sure those are understaffed and the machines break and there's not enough ballots and the lines are 4 to 6 hours long. And some of those people, well, they won't have enough. They'll have to go back to work now and they have to jump out of line. In other words, you do what most of the states do now if you wanted to make sure poor people couldn't vote. Well, since 2000, my state of Oregon has exclusively done vote by mail. Since like 2011, I think Washington has. Colorado's done it since 2013, I think. So we've got three states now that are doing this. You get this election guide that's mailed to you well in advance. You can read through every candidate, all their background. They got links to websites you can go look up. They've got all the initiatives and the tax levies. You can actually research this shit. It's wonderful. And then they mail you your ballot. You just fill out the little ovals and you send it in. You can send it in early. You can send it in on the day. You can drive over to the polling station, actually drop it off yourself if you want to. But why this won't happen? Well, too many of these Republican states rely on voter suppression. And if you got vote by mail and you're making it easier for people, that's harder to suppress the vote. Now, I think this one, though, I think vote by mail could happen in many more states, though. I think we could get this in many more states. Step four, you want to fix democracy? You want to especially fix our presidential elections? Shorten the damn election season. Did you realize last year Major League Baseball played 2,465 games with 30 teams consisting of 750 players to come up with a champion? That took 2 months less than the United States competing 50 primaries between two teams with 20 players to select a president. When your event is taking longer than the baseball season, yeah, you're running a little long here. So there's a petition. You know the musician Sheryl Crow, right? She's got a petition to the Democratic Committee and the Republican Committee begging them to please shorten the primary season. We're like the only country in the world that has such a long-ass presidential election season. And the problem with that as we get to the point where, you know, you just finished the last midterm election and now you're on to the presidential election. It's like those, you know, when you hear the Christmas carols before Halloween, it's like, hey, hold up a bit here. And I think it really affects our election because over this long, drawn-out season, that's more time to spend money on those political ads and more time for the big money to start affecting the election. I know some people say just, you know, get rid of Citizens United. You know, yeah, we could do that too, but even if Citizens United sticks around, if the season is shorter, there's less time for that big money to make a difference. So let's shorten the primary season. I think we ought to do it like we do the NCAA tournament, right? Let's do it like this. Let's start the election in September, right? And every week there's a regional primary, right? Like you have like Super Tuesday when there's a group of states, but let's do it regionally, right? We'll have like the Northeast region and the Southeast Conference and the Midwest and the Southwest and the, you know, California have its own and right. But have these little regional ones each week and they're always following a Monday debate, right? We'll have the Tuesday election day, but again, vote by mail, but Tuesday election day follow a Monday debate before it for each region and then rotate the regions. Right. No more of this Iowa always going first and New Hampshire always going first. Like this year, we'll start with the Southeast and that's the first region to vote. But next year, the Northeast will be the first region to vote or whatever. But rotate it every year. This way, it's a week by week. People get in that habit of, oh, it's election season, starts in September. And every week there's a vote in a different region that eventually leads to the vote in November for the president. Why can't we do it that way? And then people are more civically engaged because it's unlike the freaking baseball season that takes forever. Now we've compacted it more like the football season, like college football. And we can get people's attention and keep their attention and not have such a long, drawn out season where the money and the mudslinging starts to take such an effect. That's what I'd like to see. Here's another idea I've got. Again, since we're saving democracy. Now, by the way, this idea of the shortened season, never going to happen. Now, it could happen because the Republican and Democratic parties are private organizations. They could change their rules if they wanted to. But longer campaign seasons mean more spending on TV campaign ads and salaries for political hacks and attention for small states. And so it's not going to happen. Wish it would. What else would I change if I could? A federal term limits amendment. Now, this is a weird one for me, folks, because for the longest time, I've not been a term limits guy. In fact, I don't like the term limits that we have under the 22nd Amendment for president. If we didn't have term limits, Barack Obama could run for a third term right now. We wouldn't have this Trump problem, right? Bill Clinton could have run for a third term. We might not have had George W. Bush, right? So, you know, I don't like that term limits amendment. And besides, if someone is a good politician and can keep winning re-election, why should we flush him down the tubes? Shouldn't we want to keep the people with experience? But here's the problem. This is where I've changed my mind on this subject, is because from an ideologically pure point of view, yeah, I'm right. Like a good politician should be able to get re-elected and so on. But from a practical point of view, it's incumbency and money that wins these re-elections. And then these guys become like barnacles. You got guys like John Conyers, who has been in the House of Representatives for over 51 years. One job, House of Reps, 51 years. What was it? What did Byrd serve, like 57 or something like that? Or was it the other guy? Can't remember. Anyway, but yeah, that's a problem because then you've got the same encrusted thinking and no chance for new blood getting in there. So I've decided now that there ought to be federal term limits, but I got a different way of doing it. Let's get rid of the 22nd Amendment that limits presidents to two terms. So I think two terms is too short. Imagine the good that could have been done in a 12-year Obama legacy or a 12-year, well, whatever, right? I say we get rid of the 22nd Amendment, come up with a new amendment that says you can, the only people eligible for federal office are those who have held that office for a dozen years or fewer. Okay, so if you want to be a congressman, you can serve 6 2-year terms. But after that, no more congressman. You're done. Out. You're a senator? You can serve 2 6-year terms. That's it. Two terms as a senator, and then you're out. You want to be president? You can serve 3 4-year terms. And that's it. 12 years, you're done. You get appointed to the Supreme Court, 12 years max. You can stay on the Supreme Court for 12 years. However, you can serve more than one office. So you could be a 6-term congressman and then be a 2-term senator, then be a 3-term president, then be 12 years on the Supreme Court. That way, if you're a really good politician, you're really serving the public. Theoretically, you could serve the public your whole life. You could serve for 48 years so long as you keep moving up. No more just being the complacent incumbent at one level. You got to move up. You got to graduate out of your level. So if we did something like that, that's where I could be for the term limits. That would be okay with me. And finally, the last way that I would fix democracy. Oh, and this term limits thing. To make it happen, you'd got to have an amendment, right? So you need 2/3 of Congress or 2/3 of the state legislatures to pull this off. And that's why it won't happen. We're going to convince a bunch of these guys that have been in Congress for 40 years that they ought to be kicked out of Congress. Yeah, let me sign that. They'll be right. They'll be right for that, won't they? Yeah, they'll jump right on that. So unfortunately, I don't think it'll happen. And finally, my step 6. Here's the final way. This is my final way. Fix American democracy. Nationwide citizen initiative petitions. I mean, the power of the people to craft their own laws in initiatives has been so transforming in the states that have this. I mean, it's no coincidence that the states that have the best medical marijuana and that have marijuana legalization are states that have citizen initiatives, because the legislatures aren't likely to do this kind of thing. And now, it can be used for good. You can come up with medical marijuana, assisted suicide. It can be used for evil. They do those anti-gay initiatives or the crippling anti-tax code types of things. But regardless which direction it's going, there's no doubt that having a citizen initiative leads to a greater range of change in a quicker time than what you get without initiative power. Of course, why that won't happen is because those states that don't have initiative power, the legislatures would have to make that change. And why are they going to make a change that makes them less powerful? So again, I've got the 6 ways to fix American democracy, but you're going to have to make me the absolute dictator to pull them off. That's the only way this is going to happen. And I promise I'll do it. I'll just enact these 6 things and then I'll give up absolute power. I swear I would never, you know, abuse that. Really promise. But that's my ideas for how we fix American democracy. And I'm enjoying watching people's chats on this as well. I'm a little frustrated. You know, I've been a Democrat for so long that I thought Democrats' cave was a place. It's just so frustrating sometimes. You know, we get this change election that we just lose. And then who do we appoint our leaders? Pelosi and Schumer. Okay. Here we go. Just the same old, same old. All right, folks, that sound means it's all the time we got for today. It's good to be back from Jamaica, but it's cold here in Portland. We'll be back tomorrow with more news, interviews, and views you can use for the cannabis community. You can always call us 24 hours a day at 650-LEGAL-MJ. We've got our voicemail number up there. If you want to leave a voicemail, you might hear it on the show. For everyone here at CannabisRadio.com, I'm Radical Russ Belville. Thanks for joining us. Check out my column on HighTimes.com tomorrow, the Radical Rant column, and my work at WeedNews.co. And thank you, everybody, for the well wishes about Roscoe P. Coltrane. Take care. Have yourself a good night. Happy holidays to all. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it.
Maui Wowie, Acapulco Gold.